Kavod Chanukah we begin b'shalakum yantif of Torah Shel Peh, or yantif that's entirely the Torah Shel Peh. We could throw ourselves in b'chol to limud Torah, and particularly to the limud of an inyan which is drabanan, seems particularly apropos, and all the more so, this is an erev halacha that governs the way we're meant to relate to Nachrim, and speaks not only in halacha, but perhaps in hashkafa as well, to maintain the right balance. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves and making a couple of assumptions. So let's back up a little bit. Let's start from the beginning. We had spent the beginning of the year, the very end, Masechas Avodah Zarah and Tefilas Kelim. The first two prakim of Masechas Avodah Zarah are focused on the halachas that govern interactions between Jews and non-Jews. Third parak, moving into the fourth parak, deals with Avodah Zarah, actual Avodah Zarah, not the action, not the Isser Maisa, worshipping Avodah Zarah, that's the Masechah Sanhedrin, but the third parak and part of the fourth deal with Cheftze Avodah Zarah, the Isser Hanav, an item which is Ne'evad, or an item which is Tikrovis, and so on and so forth. And then the end of the Masech, the balance of the fourth parak into the fifth, deal with, almost to the very end, deal with halachas of yayin. Non-Jewish wine is such a large topic, sort of has its own zone, that parak and a half. At the very end of that, there's discussion about kashering clay yayin, that gets in general issues. So at the end of the parak, of handling kalim, kashering kalim and tefilas kalim. But here we are, towards the end of the second parak, again, the first two parakim deal with various halachos, daraisa, drabanan, that regulate the interaction between Jews and non-Jews. And particularly of a series of three Mishnayos, at the end of the second parak, that talk about items that you get from Nachrim, very mesudar. The first Mishnah is on parak and Daf Chav Teslan Beis. Elu Dvar Mishal Ovdei Kochavim, Elu Dvar Mishal Nachrim. Ovdei Kochavim is presumably a censored version. Elu Dvar Mishal Nachrim. The following items you get from a non-Jew, Asurim, the Isuran Isra Hana. So the first of the three Mishnayos lists those items which are Asur Bahana. And then on Lamed Hey, you have the second of the three Mishnayos. And that's Dvar Mishal Abdi Kochavim Asurim, the Ein Isurin Isra Hana. Items which you get from a Nachri which are Asur Bahila, the Murta Bahana. And finally, on Daf Lamed Tes, Elu Mutarin. So you have these three Mishnayos in a row. Chavtes, Lamed Hei, and Lamed Tes, items which are Asur Bahana, items which are Mutter Bahana, but Asur Bachila, and items which are not even Asur Bachila, items which are Mutter Bachila. Items you can buy from a Nachri, more or less, items you can, loosely speaking, items you can buy from a Nachri without Hashkacha, at least during the reality, the food production reality of the days of Chazal. Now, so that first list, the Chavtes, is basically items that have an Avodah Zarah connection, and that's why there's an Easter Hana. Then that Mishnah really gets involved with some Machal Yakum issues in terms of Gevina Sakum. But then the major list of Machal Yakum, items you get from a Nachri which are asur to eat, not a Avodah Zarah issue, some Mutter Barah, but asur to eat. So that's this Mishnah, Lamed Hayim Beis. Chalav Akum, again mentioned Gevina appears in earlier Mishnah, Chalav Akum, Pas Akum, Shemen Akum, and Shlakos. Shlakos are cooked foods. And the Mishnah goes on to talk about items that might contain a non-kosher ingredient or may have been handled with non-kosher equipment. So our focus right now is shlakos. Shlakos is the term in Mishnah is what we call bishul akum. So as you saw, the Gemara picks up with, the Gemara goes in order, starts with chalav and then pas. A lot of discussion about pas and shemen. Shemen is intriguing because Shemen, the Mishnah, actually references the fact that they were matir the Isser Shemen, a very rare application of the din that, in principle, a later Beis Din under circumstances can annul a takana of an earlier Beis Din. That's the pashas of what happened with Shemen. To figure exactly why, Gemara discusses that. And then, again, in the bottom of Lamed Zayim of Beis, the Gemara gets up to Shlakos. So let's talk a little bit about the opening two Shakla Vataris that the Gemara has. The first question the Gemara raises at the bottom of Lamed Zayin or Beis, wrapping onto the first line of Lamed Ches, Amid Aleph, is a question of the Mokor, what's the source for the Isra Bishalakum? And then the Gemara picks up at the top of Lamed Ches, Amid Aleph, with a question of working out the conditions, the details of Bishalakum. The details of Bishalakum will stretch across Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Lamed Ches Amud Beis. The opening issue, the second Shaka, the first Shaka Vitaria is about the Mokar of the Isser, second Shaka Vitaria is about which, is a question of which, to which foods does Bishal Akam apply. So that, as you saw, the Gemara, in the opening Shaka Vitaria, the Gemara asks the question, Minoan Emili. This thrusts us back into the, some of the opening issues we had in Tfilas Kehillah. Minoan Emili is a loaded question. Minoan Emili usually means not just what's the source, but what's the source min ha-Torah. As we mentioned when we talked about Tfilas Kehillah, all or almost all Rishonim assume Tfilas Kehillah is Daraisa. Minoan Emili, the Rishonim write in, by a Tosis write in the beginning of the last parak of Yuma, that Minoan Emili, as opposed to, let's say, something like Keneged Mi, Minoan Emili implies we're about to quote a real source Daraisa. And indeed, the Gemara initially, here the Gemara is clear. That there's a hava mina that it's daraisa, and the Gemara rejects that. And the Gemara says ultimately that drasha is not a drasha gemura. It's top line lamed ches amud aleph midrabanan ukra asmachta bi alma. So, an interesting question of what is there any remnant? We assume that bishalakim is drabanan. Is there any remnant of this Shaka Vitaria Lamaskana? What had been the Havamina? The Havamina had been, more according to Rabbi Yochanan, that sought the darshan from a pasuk in Parshas Dvarim. Ocha Bakesav, they're negotiating reports of the Jews negotiating with the non-Jews. Ocha Bakesav Tashreini V'chalti, Mayim Bakesav Titanli V'sharsisi. The Jews say to one of the non-Jewish nations, they're trying to whom they're trying to pass through, we're not going to take for free. You'll sell us food. You'll sell us water. We'll eat the food that you sell us, and we'll drink the water that you sell us. We're not going to take advantage. So the Rabbi Yechon suggests a hekesh, that the ochel and the mayim are in the same pasuk. The ochel gave for nachri, the mayim gave for nachri. The Gemara said, well, the mayim is the lo nishtanu. So maybe ochel also, the only ochel gave for nachri is if it's lo nishtanu, which again, those are in case of avarchim. So and ochel shenashtana has a lot of meaning. So the Gemara wants to, so I understand that means if the nachri cooked the food, it's problematic. But there are other items that are nishtana that are not an issue. For instance, the Gemara talks about the nachri toasted wheat kernels. It doesn't become bishalakum. So the Gemara tries to first tweak it a little bit. Maybe lo nishtana mibriyaso. It wasn't changed from its natural form. So Gemara says, well, so how about if the nachri ground the wheat into flour? Really? So you're not allowed to buy raw flour from a non-Jewish miller? That's the same as, it's not cooked, it's not baked. But if you say the isser is because the nachri changed in mibriyaso, unlike water, which is still in its natural state, so then that should be a problem. We know it's not a problem. Again, you have to figure out if there are any non-kosher ingredients, but fundamentally, the fact that a non-Jew milled wheat kernels into flour doesn't make a treif. Then the Gemara says, okay, but maybe it's only nishtan b'briyasa adei ha'ur, only through fire, and that's going to limit you to bishalakim. The Gemara says that's a nice idea, but there's no indication of psukim. So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela midrabanan kras machti b'yamos. So that was a drasha. So Rashi and Lamed Chesam and Aleph, excuse me, Lamed Chesam and Beis, Rashi does at one point reference the idea of Nishtanu Mibriyasan. When the Gemara says Lamed Chesam and Beis, that hot water, the Nachri boiled water for tea, that's not a Bishalakim problem. So Rashi Masal Vachamin says, oh, they were Nishtanu Mibriyasan. Wow. So Rashi is going back to this language, which is shocking. Rabbi Nachmanal on Lamed Zayin Beis makes it clear. That's not why. Well, he says, well, Rabbi Hananel explicitly, he says, we'll take a look at the next sugi. We'll see in a moment why it is a hot water is not a problem of Bishalakim. Lamaisa, the poskim assume, the Rashba says maybe it's just another way of saying what the Gemara is about to see. We're going to see in a moment the Gemara is going to have two conditions for Bishalakim. Maybe this is just a reference to one of them. Doesn't seem like there's much nafkin mina ladina. There is a Ran who does seem to present a Yidal and Beis Badapi Rif as though there's a the Nishtanami Briyaso is still relevant. That's not Alpi Pashas what we assume. The one nafkin mina lamasa, so to speak, that does emerge from this Gemara is a point that Tosis makes in Lama Zayim and Beis, that long Tosis of Hashlakos. And Rabbi Yonatan makes an interesting historical comment. He says, it must be. The Gemara had a Hava Mina, that this is a Din Daraisa. Then we said, no, it ultimately has to be a Din Drabanan. It must be it's a Gezerah Kadmonis. It says, Mishema. This is probably a very ancient Gezerah. Such an ancient Gezerah that they had a Hava Mina. That's a Din Daraisa. And they came to the conclusion, no, it's a Din Drabanan. The Gemara says it's more ancient than some of the other Gezerahs. For instance, it's more ancient than Pas. And that's why, as we're going to see, as we begin to unfold, unwrap the Dinam of Bishalakam, the dinam of Bishal and the dinam of Pas do not necessarily correspond to one another, even though they seem like should be similar. Cooked food made by an Achri and bread that was baked by an Achri. We'll see the rules don't always correspond, and that's at least in part because the Gzera of Bishal Akam predates the Gzera of Pas Akam. So what indeed are the rules of Bishal Akam? So Midrabanan cross Bach Diyama. So when Taka does it apply? And when Taka does it not apply. So here the Gemara has another historically intriguing sugya. The Gemara Tavla Lama Chesna, you have a question?
No, but because on Lama Chesna is going to be Yochanan, it says that an Akum is Miliyat HaTag, it's Oser, right? And Rashi explains that Zeu Bishulo. But that proves already that Rashi is admitting that the Pasuk is not relevant because it means Yishtana Aide Mibriyaso Aide Ha'ur is not necessary.
Oh, it's interesting because the dog is whole.
Because it's not cooked at all, Rashi. Like Rashi says, "Lama Chesam Abayi." The case with Rabbi Yochanan versus Chizkiya.
Yeah.
Rashi says there's no cooking involved. It's just salting it. And Rashi says, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's enough already to be osir it, even without any fire.
And therefore.
And that proves the pasuk's not relevant anymore because the. Gemara and Lamed Zayin
Abayi said, Interesting. That was the Gemara tried to work that through. Yeah, that's a good point. I thought you were saying Fakert. You see that. That's a good point. Yeah, we'll get to that later in the Siman. I should just note the following. Levi's point that there is a discussion Lamed Chesam Abayi about salting. If I salt fish instead of cooking it. So just for now, we'll get to it later on, but we'll see towards the end of the siman. One of the discussions is what sorts of food preparation processes are included in Bishul. So this is important to point out the following for now. There are several areas of halacha where we do consider melicha to be a cold equivalent of cooking or grilling. There is sometimes a din of melich kiroseach. Let's say in terms of blias, certainly, there is a rule that just as heat is one way of causing flavor transfer between two foods. I cook two foods together, I assume they're going to share flavors with one another, whether it's relevant to Tom Kicker. So it's also true that Maliach Kiroseach, they have something which is salted with something else, two foods, and they're salted, so that also, even though it's a Bliya Bitsoni.
That would even make it Nishtan and Ribiyaso, this fish that you salted?
Again! You're right that if it's a rejected havnis, it's hard to know how to be magdir, especially since the Ali de Ha'ur part was the line that the Gemara seemed to be rejecting it. There are cases where maliach is the equivalent of heat. There's cases where in soaking, kavush is the equivalent of heat, not only in the context of also of tam ki'ik or flavor transfer in Yodaya, but also, let's say, the just as maror that's mavushal is not good for the mitzvah, so too mar that's kavush, it's soaked for an extended period of time. You soak mar for 24 hours, it's, we say, kavush kamavushal. So there are these quasi quasi forms of bishul that don't actually involve eat. Yes, that's interesting. How you would be magic is an interesting question. But yeah, it's a good point. Al pi pashtus. The pashtus is that even according to Rashi, Rashi didn't really mean there's a third condition. No, he's using the language of the opening of the sugya. To rephrase some of the dinim. Some of the dinim they're about to learn here. And that's segment number two. The second, this brings us to Sif Aleph from the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara quotes two versions of what is the condition that defines which, what's the criterion that defines which food, which foods are Bishul Akum sensitive and which foods are not Bishul Akum sensitive. So the Gemara opens, Shmuel Bar Yitzchak says the name of Rav, that it depends whether it's Nechal Chai. Or it's Eino Nechal Chai. A food that's edible raw, people eat raw apples. You can also bake an apple, and it has a different flavor, a different texture. Some people appreciate that more, maybe more classy, more prestigious. To have a, give someone an apple for dessert, that's pretty, it's practical, but it's not elegant. You give someone a baked apple for dessert, that's already a presentation. So, but the first version of the Gemara has it, that baked apples are not Bishul Akum sensitive because it's Nachal Kamo Shulchai. It's something you would eat raw. So even though the Nachri may have added to it, elevated it by cooking or baking it, but since I could have eaten it raw as well, so the Bishul doesn't make it treif. The Bishul doesn't make it Asr. The Gemara says that's the version of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Amarav that was the tradition in the Yeshiva of Sura. But in the Yeshiva of Pumbedisa, that a different tradition. Their tradition was Shmuel Yitzchak, a quote from the name of Rav, a different rule. That's Eino Nechal Shulchan Malachim Lapas Boas Hapa. So what you're looking at is the final product. That first conditioning I had relates to the before. The second condition relates to the after. And the first condition, Nechal Chai, is how, was it already edible even before the Nachri cooked it? The second condition, Olal Shulchan Malachim, is what did he produce? So the Nachri cooked it, the Nachri baked it, and now what do we have? Is it, did he do such a good job, that did he make such impact, that now it's even servable at the royal table? It's all, literally, it's Ol al Shulchan Malachim? Oh no, it's nice, it's edible, but it's not fit for the royal table. So the Gemara has these two lishonos, and the Gemara gives nafkaminas, cases, dagim ketanim, ardi, daisa. So Gemara talks about nafkaminas between these two nuschos. Now the Rov Rishonim, assume, and that's the Tosas already talks about that, Diamasolik Benayu. Rov Rishonim assumed that we accept lahalacha both of these criteria. In other words, we're makel like both. The only time a food is Bishul Akum sensitive is if it passes both tests. If beforehand it wasn't edible raw beforehand b'chlal, and by the time the nachri is done, not only is it edible, but it's even al shulchan lachem, if the food is both eino nechal kamo shulchai and al shulchan lachem, then and only then is it Bishul Akum susceptible? That's the position of Rov Rishonim, Tosas, and the Rambam, and the Rashba, v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. The Rashba does quote in Taras Habayis, one of his rabbis, the Ramban, disagreed. Ramban held we should only follow Sura, the first version. All he cared about is Nechal, Kamoshu, Chai. But as long as it's inedible raw, that might mean, let's say, that potato chips would be Bishul Akum sensitive, because raw potatoes are not edible. So sorry. What the Nachri produced might not be Ol Shulchan Malachim. Of course, Rabban would say it doesn't matter. All I accept is the first rule. Halacha L'maisa, you see in Shulchan Yopin Shulchan Aruch, you see right away we accept both rules and consistent with the position of the vast majority of the Rishonim. That's what Shulchan Aruch writes in Sif Aleph. Could hear Kuf Yudimel Sif Aleph. Dovash Eino Nechal Kamo Shulchai. And Ola Shulchan Malachim So then, if the nachri cooked it, it's there's a bishul akum problem. This opening sif of Siman Yud Gimel is similar to the opening sif we saw the same pattern in Siman Kuf Chaf. The Shulchan Aruch manages like pack a lot of many different dimensions of the din are all in this one long sentence. But for now, the first point is just that we do accept both conditions. We accept both conditions lahakel. We accept both conditions lahakel. So let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about what these conditions mean. So let's talk first about the Nachal Kamo Shul Chai. Nachal Kamo Shul Chai, one big question in Nachal Kamo Shul Chai, I gave as an example a baked apple. A baked apple is Nachal Kamo Shul Chai. People eat raw apples. Rabbeinu Chananel said the same is true, by the way, for hot water. People drink cold water also. You may appreciate hot water more, especially if it may turn to tea or coffee, but people drink cold water as well. And again, that's what I mentioned before. Some suggest that's really what Rashi meant. Maybe that's what Rashi meant also. Now, so what would be other examples of that? So what would you say about carrots? What would you say about carrots? If you have grilled carrots, a nachri grilled carrots. Again, assuming the ingredients are all kosher, but the nachri did all the grilling. The nachri grilled the carrots, is that a bishalachim problem? So you can eat raw carrots. You could eat raw carrots, or can you? So your great-great-grandparents probably would have been horrified that you said that. Raw carrots are for rabbits. People eat simis. People take carrots, they cook them, preferably with honey and raisins, but say, which in Eastern Europe a century or two ago, which self-respecting yid, or non-Jew, which self-respecting human being ate raw carrots? Eating styles have changed. So nowadays, raw carrots are much more popular than simis. But once upon a time, that was not the case. Once upon a time, raw carrots was seen as unfit for human consumption in many parts of the world. So Shaila is, so how do you have a rule of Nechel Kamo Shul Chai in Bisholakam? How does that work? So the Rambam writes that it depends on the time and place. Rambam writes that Mishtanel Fi Amakim. The question of Nechel Kamo Shul Chai is Mishtanel Fi Amakim Fi Azman. And the truth is, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you see that it's already in the Gemara. Where the Rambam has it, the Gemara is going to get, the Rambam has it here. Halacha Yates, the dinim of Bishlach in the middle of Perek Yitzayim and Hilchos Machalos Asuros. We had Tfilas Kehillim was earlier in Perek Yitzayim. So you were deep into Perek Yitzayim. We'll get to this din later. The Gemara gives a case of relevant to a different dimension of Bishul Akum. The Gemara gives a case of a nachri toasting kosher chagavim, kosher grasshopper. The Gemara gives a particular case trying to figure out is it a Bishul Akum problem. The grasshopper is a kosher species, but the nachri baked them, the nachri toasted them, so is that a Bishul Akum problem? So the Rambam writes, it's not, for whatever the details are, we'll get to it further on, it's not a problem. I feel the makam shen ala shulchan malach, mishum prepares. Even in a place where people do serve grasshoppers al shulchan malach, I don't think they usually serve al shulchan malach in America. The Rambam says there that ala shulchan malach does depend on the makam, presumably on the zman. It varies by society. He doesn't directly address nechal chai, but there's a Gemara that does. The Gemara that we just saw, when it gives the two conditions, then gives the Mai Benayu. The Ike Benayu, one of the Ike Benayus was Ardi. What are Ardi? So Rashi says Ardi are bule, mushrooms. Rashi says the mushrooms are not eaten raw. They're not eaten raw, but on the other hand, they're not olal shulchan malach. It's not a classy food. The Shach in Shulchan Aruch writes, so nowadays it is a classy food. The Shachri writes, nowadays, the end of Sifkat and Beis, Shachri writes, Kemein and Pitrios, mushrooms are lo shulchalachim. And therefore, it is a problem of Bishalachim. He says, Ramah wrote that in his freestanding Sefer Halacha called Tof Ches Taras Hatas. What's interesting is nowadays, mushrooms are once again not Bishalachim sensitive, but for the opposite reason. Tkufas HaTalmud, mushrooms were not Bishalachim, grilled mushrooms were not a problem. Why? Because it wasn't classy. It wasn't Halacha Halachim. But 500 years ago, it was called, the mushrooms got a prestige bump, and they became Bishalachim sensitive. Nowadays, mushrooms can still be plenty prestigious, especially portobellos, creminis, whatever it is, but now it's mutter for the other reason, because people eat raw mushrooms. They serve in a crudité. People have a sliced mushroom with a dip. So it's now mutter for a different reason. The same is true. Same is true, I think, in the OU Chuvas, internal Chuvas on Bishalachim, they point out that is relevant for cranberries also. Cranberries are very, very tart. So some people appreciate very tart, natural tart cranberries. Most people do not. You have a much wider market if you figure out a way to get a lot of sugar to adhere to the cranberries. That's what the Ocean Spray Cooperative has worked on over the years. So they have cranberry juice remixed in. I think recently they came out with no sugar added cranberry juice. It's tart, for those who appreciate that. But a much more common taste is cranberry juice cocktail. Cocktail means they add in a lot of sugar in some form or another. Or you jellied cranberry sauce. Essentially what you're doing is you're cooking the cranberries with a lot of sugar. And that's a way to get the sugar to adhere to the cranberries so that people will appreciate it. So it was always the case that people ate cranberries only cooked, because you had to figure out a way to get the sugar to adhere to the cranberries. Usually, traditionally, the only way to do it was to boil it with a lot of sugar. So cranberries used to be eino nechal chai, and therefore bishalachim sensitive. Until, at a certain point, the Ocean Spray Research and Development Chavra came up with the idea of craisins, which, as far as I understand, they're not really... The drying process doesn't involve an actual bishul. Now, there's a figure out a way for another way to get cranberries to be sugared. It no longer involves bishul. As a result, as a result of the development of craisins, nowadays cranberries are considered to be nechal chai and therefore not bishul akum sensitive. Let's just take a moment to appreciate what that means. Let's talk for a moment before we get back to the sugi here. Just for a moment about what that means practically. Cranberries are bishalachim sensitive, not bishalachim sensitive. Nuts and bolts, what does that mean? Lamaisa on the ground. What it means is the following. If you want to give a hashkacha to canned, to jellied cranberry sauce. So what does that look like? So to give a hashkacha means you have to make sure, for sure you have to make sure that the ingredients are kosher and that the equipment is kosher. If it's bishalachim sensitive, you also have to make sure that every single run is not the bishalachim problem. So here's the rub. To have, for most foods, to make sure that the ingredients are kosher and that the equipment is kosher, what that means is, in a well-run or kosher organization, you go to see the plant, you learn their processes, and you iron out with the company what systems they have to have in place to make sure all the ingredients are kosher, all the equipment is kosher, and then you set up the system, and then the mashkiach is nichnas v'yotze. Mashkiach will randomly pop in and do spot checks, and there are other ways of logging what's happening to make sure that the systems are being followed and that you're confident that the food only has kosher ingredients and only be used on kosher equipment. And if there's any issue with it, the equipment be used with other food, then it's being properly koshered in advance. You don't need a mashkiach necessarily present for every single run of production if you have a good, well-run system of yotze v'nichnas, assuming that it's not bishalachim sensitive. The only concern is kashrus of the ingredients, the kashrus of the equipment, so you can have the mashkiach coming and going, and if it's done properly, it's totally fine. If, however, the food is bishalachim sensitive, it's not enough to be mashkiach that the ingredients are kosher and the equipment is kosher. Every single run of production, you need to have a Jew there in advance to start up the equipment. We'll get to the details later on, but the Jew has to be involved, has to at the very least start the fire, so that is Hishtatzvus Yisrael, it's not called Bishalakam. So it's not enough to pop in occasionally. Every single run, the Mashgiach has to be there from the at the outset. So that's much more labor intensive. You can't just have Mashgiachim coming and going. Every single run, you have to Mashgiach there. So that's even more labor intensive, and that's going to be more expensive. Because practically speaking, it's calling for more staffing on the part of the Hashgacha. So until the invention of the development of craisins, cranberry sauce, which is, well, we'll get to the Ola Shulchan Lacha more in a moment, but certainly is served in socially significant settings, particularly in the United States of America. So then it's Ola Shulchan Lacha. It used to be Eino Nechachai, and therefore it was Bishlachim sensitive. And with the development of craisins, because we assume that both Nechachai and Ola Shulchan Lacha, both of them are Tali Ba'osam Akavosos Man, they're Mishtana according to the society. So, as with the mushrooms, as with the chagavim, so too with the cranberries. The zman hazeh, we assume it's not nechach. It is nechachai, and therefore it's not bishul akum sensitive. So that first question of the where and when, that's a question that's relevant both to nechachai and to olah shulcham lachem. I'd love to raise over the next little while. Three questions that come up specifically in the Haggadah of Ola Shulchan Lachem. Talk a drop about Nechachai, and then end with the Lamaisa, the list of the five types of foods that, practically speaking, Bizman Hazeh are Bishul Akam sensitive. In terms of Ola Al Shulchan Lachem, it literally rises on the, it's served on the king's table. So the first major question that comes up is, how do you define Shulchan Lachem? They quote in the name of the Chazanesh, canned sardines. It's not necessarily such a common taste, Bizman Hazeh. I think a couple of decades ago, it was more widely appreciated. So canned sardines, it is I think nowadays, a tuna has overtaken sardines in terms of popularity as a canned fish. Canned fish is definitely handy. It's a preservable protein. It doesn't require refrigeration. The Chazanesh is supposed to have said, the canned sardines, sardines are a bishalachim problem. Sardines are olach shulchalachim. Sardines are not a very classy food. He said, the Queen of England eats sardines for breakfast. That's the line they say from the Chaznish. The Queen of England eats sardines for breakfast. So that's called olach shulchalachim. In other words, she's not going to serve an estate dinner, but she's just sitting in her private quarters having breakfast by herself or with her close retinue. So she would have sardines. So it's olach shulchalachim. The Chaznish was assuming that Ola Shulchan Lachem is literal. What is served to the king? What is served on the king's table? We usually assume, though, the most poskim assume that is not the case, neither Lahakel nor Lahachme. There are one or two kosher organizations which apparently reached out to, supposedly many years ago, reached out to the royal chef of Denmark to get the full list of what the king of Denmark has served. It's somewhat problematic anyways, because it helps if you're in Denmark. But it says, presumably there are some differences between eating styles in Denmark and the U.S. But al-Kalpanim l'chored, not only it may not be helpful, it's not necessary. The Darkei Tshuva quotes, Darkei Tshuva is a likut, a Mishnah Berurah style likut, but much more, very, very extensive. The first 200 or so Simon of Yardaya. So Darkei Tshuva here in Chassidish Halikot. So Darkei Tshuva here in Kuf Yud Gimel quotes from Rishonim that it's Melech O Sarim. Doesn't have to be Dafka the king, any king or other aristocrats. Already a broader way of thinking about it. If you look at the back of the Rambam, Rambam's Nusach is very rich. He says, in how Perek Gizayin Halacha Tezvav, the Rambam writes, Bishlachim only applies the Medvar Mum only if it's Ola Shulchan Malachim. But if it's not Ola Shulchan Malachim, vegetables that aren't eaten Ola Shulchan Malachim, tormusin and fruits or vegetables, that's mutter. Why? The Rambam takes pains to explain why, which is interesting. She'ikar Akzeir Shem Chasnus. The core of the Gzeira is Chasnus. This is an important point. The Gemara says, we didn't really discuss the rationale for Bishul Akum. The Gemara has on Lamed Vav Amid Beis, the Gemara lists many Machalei Akum that were Nesar Mishum Chasnas. They forbade you from having Pas Akum or Shemen Akum or Yein Akum because forbidding those will be a speed bump that will prevent you from over-socializing with the Nachrim. Over-socializing with the Nachrim could, in the worst case scenario, lead to interdating and intermarriage. So that's what we call Mishum Chasnus. The Gemara does not say explicitly that Bishul Akum is Mishum Chasnus. That's not the implication. On the other hand, the Gemara there notably left Bishul Akum out of the list. So there actually is a Rashi. Rashi on the top line, Lama Ches Amun Aleph, says it's examined Rabban, Bishul Akum is Rabban. Why? We're worried Yachilenu Davar Tamei. The Nachri may, sooner or later, if you get comfortable eating the Nachri's food, sooner or later he may give you something non-kosher. The Tosas says that's very difficult. It says Rashi himself on the Mishnah, Lamehe Beis said it's Mishum Chasnas, and he said that's what we assume. That's what the Rambam writes here as well. The Tama Isser Bishul Akum is Chasnas. So the Rambam says, so therefore, that's why. Well, where do these rules come from? Where do these criteria come from? The Rambam says, I'll tell you where El Shulchan Aruch comes from. The point is, the Rambam says, we want to avoid being free and easy with the Nachri inviting me for a meal. So, that's really the issue is, would you be mechabed someone else with such a food? So Rambam is pretty clear, and that's the way most poskim assume, that we don't mean literally shulchan lachem, that's an expression. What we mean is a formal meal. A formal meal. So in the Oyu Tshuva, they look a lot at what's served at chasanas. Rabbanim go to weddings. Plenty. Baruch Hashem. So Kol Yisrael should continue to have many simchas. So they'll look often at, and they'll sometimes say, you know, we've seen the last couple of years, they're starting to serve the following food at the shmorg, at a nice wedding hall. Okay, so apparently now that is, this has now become Ola al Shulchan Malach. That's the Pasha. I believe the Star K, I believe, double check, but I believe Rabbi Heinemann is the one who reached out to find out about the menu of the Royal Chef of Denmark. But again, the OU and most poskim assume that we're not actually looking at the king per se. It's a melitza. It means what's served at a formal meal, consistent with the Rambam, consistent with the Darkei Tshuva. When they start to serve terror chips at classy shmorgs, so that meant that from that point on, terror chips are considered to be olal shulchan lachem. Yeah, question.
Does that mean like all the kids' food that's there for the younger audience?
Yeah. I mean, they're fries and chicken fingers. Lech ora not. Lech ora not. That's gufa meant to be not chashuv food. Oftentimes, there are often many adults who wish they had the kids' meals or taka managed to get their hands on the kids' meals, which is, you know, that's their own decision. But what that means is they prefer their taste over class. But no one would argue that the kids' meals are classy. They're serving them for the kids. It's a concession. Some halls would not, because of the snob factor, would refuse to serve kids' meals. And other places will serve kids' meals, but it's understood. That's not what we actually serve to the adults, and the kids are not interested in pomp and circumstance. Yeah. So that's issue number one. Again, I always had three questions about Shulchan Lachem. The first question is, how you magdir Shulchan Lachem? And most poskim assume Shulchan Lachem doesn't mean literally a melech. Against the Chazon Ish, most assume that it means a formal meal. Or formally, that's Rambam writes, with what would you be mechabed a guest? Issue number two in the world of Olah Shulchan Lachem is, are you looking at the min or that particular dish? So, an example, I mentioned before, potato chips. So, potatoes are eino nechal chai. We do not eat raw potatoes. Clearly, nechal chai is totally in the min, potatoes in general, because as I said before, nechachai is a criterion that looks at what the food is like before the bishul. So at that point, it's just the raw food. But the question is, ola shel cholachim relates to the after. So am I looking at, let's say, the nachrim made potato chips? Nachrim are operating, you go to Utz. There are a whole slew of potato chip factories in Pennsylvania. So you have a nachri who's running, operating a potato chip factory. So the potatoes were raw before, when they were raw, they were inedible. So the question is it all shulchan lachem? Right? We possibly wrote a post, and you need both conditions. Is it all shulchan lachem? Potatoes are all shulchan lachem. There definitely are presentations of potato that would be served at a formal function, but not potato chips. So there are posts going to say, if potatoes are a min, that sometimes ol shulchan lachem, that means potatoes as a min are bishul akum sensitive. But Rova Poskin assume that unlike nechachai, ol shulchan lachem is totally ba'os, not ba'oso min, but ba'oso tamchui, that particular dish, that particular presentation. And the logic, again, flows from what the Rama wrote. We want to know, is a nachri producing a food that has social significance? Does it have social cachet? Is the sort of thing that he can invite you over and be mechabed with? So yeah, it could be that a creamed potato, a baked potato, certainly a baked potato that was creamed. Yeah, so that's nachal kamot. That's all shulchan lachem. So if he served you that would be a socially significant item. But you come over for chips, that's not a socially significant item. Again, it's Rova Poskim assume that unlike nachal chai, for the tenai of all shulchan lachem, you look ba'oso tamchut. And then finally, the third major question in the world of all shulchan lachem is this language the Gemara has, which the Rambam quoted, l'lapes bo'es ha'pas. Ol ha'shulchan malachim l'lapes bo'es ha'pas. Something you would serve on the royal table to as a filling on bread. So the question, what does that mean? Now, b'tkufas ha'talmud, again, those who learn Ketz Mevarchin have maybe already come across this from a different angle, b'tkufas ha'talmud, bread was the staple and was often the center of the meal. You had bread and spreads. And whatever you're eating, oftentimes you're eating in a pizza, in a lafa. It's not as much the case, certainly, not nearly as much the case, bizman hazeh, largely an expression of our affluence. Once upon a time, you had bread and you had a little bit of protein, more expensive protein, together with mostly bread, which was cheaper. Leaving aside the nutritional questions of carbs versus protein, but just a reality, facts on the ground, is B'tkufas HaTalmud, most foods were eaten on bread. So some of the Rishonim talk about parperis. Either it's Ol HaShulchan Lachem L'Hapes Bo HaPas, as a spread on your bread, a lifton, but some Rishonim also add or parperis, as a side dish that's not eaten on the bread. They eat separately. The Pri Chadosh gets involved with that. The Ritva gets involved in this already earlier. The Rashba in Taras Habayis, see, he has a very strong raya. He talks about Daisa. The Gemara talks about Daisa, which is hot cereal. Like farina. It's a question of dice. The Gemara elsewhere says, forget about it, is it classy or not? You would never eat hot cereal on bread. The Gemara says, the Gemara talks elsewhere about the Hanan Bavloi Timshoi. The Gemara says, these foolish Bavliim, they eat bread on bread, a bread sandwich. You have an oatmeal sandwich? The Gemara says, that's ridiculous. So you have to figure out, so what was the Gemara saying about Daisa? Was the Gemara saying, well, it's not ol shulchan malachim because you would never eat it on bread? Or, as the Rashba says, no. The Gemara is saying, it's fine if you would eat it by itself, but it's not a classy food. You don't serve hot cereal at the Shmorgan Marina. But if you would, if you had a classy, if you had cooked fat, if you had baked farro, So that is all shulchan lachem, even though you wouldn't put it on bread, because it would be starch on starch. So that's the position, I think, of Rova Poskim, is that papyrus is also counts. It's something either you eat on bread, that's the way they ate the main course typically between Tkufas HaTamana, or papyrus, that you eat without bread. In terms of Nechal Chai, so those again, so these are the three, again, what we discussed so far. We spoke about the Deraisa Drabbanan issue, and we spoke about the two conditions, and the Rova Poskim assume that we accept both conditions of the Hakel. One major issue in the Pratim is aware and when. We assume for both conditions that it's Tali Ba'oso Makam Ba'oso Zman. Mishtarathi Makam Ba'azman. In terms of Ola Shulchan Lachem in particular, three additional issues were how you define Shulchan Lachem. We said Rov Poskim assume Shulchan Lachem doesn't mean literally Shulchan Lachem. It means a formal meal. Number two, Rov Poskim assume that Ola Shulchan Lachem is Tali Ba'oso Tamchui, that particular dish. And number three, Rov Poskim assume, we shouldn't really debate this, Rov Poskim assume that it's either lelape, as the Shulchan Aruch says, Ola Shulchan Malachim lelapis boos hapas, Ola leparperis. Ola leparperis. Either it doesn't have to actually be eaten on bread, it could also be the sort of thing that be eaten as a side, or nowadays as a main, without bread. Now a point about Nechal Chai. Ola Shulchan Malachim, we understand the rationale, as the Rambam said. The whole Tama Takana is we want to have a speed bump to prevent over-socializing between Nachrim and Jews. The way to man's heart is through his stomach. Okay, so if you're limited in terms of how you can eat together, so that's going to limit the extent to which you're going to socialize freely. But what's Nechal Chai all about? Why should that matter? If the baked apple is very classy, so why is it that... that the baked apple is not a bishlachim problem because we could have eaten the apple raw. So there's at least two ways of thinking about it. Well, one way of thinking about it is say, okay, but Lysa, the Nachri didn't do as much. The combination of these two conditions means the Nachri took a farmer from 0 to 60. Before it wasn't even edible at all, and now it's not only edible, but it's mamish. Fantastic. Magnificent. Ola shulchan lachem. That's one way of looking at it. I'm more grateful to the Nachri. Not only did he provide me with something that's elegant, but he changed it from being absolutely inedible to elegant. That's one way of looking at Nechal Chai. Another svara that's possible, and maybe even doing in the Rambam, a pair of Rambams. The Rambam Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Tes, we get to Hilchos Shabbos in a few years, I believe we'll have a chance to discuss this. But in Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam has language where Willig likes to talk about this. Shechter pointed out that earlier, Achan, we talked about this. Rama's language in Hilchos Shabbos that makes it sound that Nechal Chai is not doesn't have the malacha bishul min haTorah. If I cook something that's Nechal Chai, that's not bishul daraisa. Mishnah Brura says it doesn't mean Nechal Chai like in Bishalach. It means mamish, like you're not doing anything. There was no change whatsoever because of cooking. But the simple meaning of the Rambam's language is that if you take raw chicken, you cook it, that's Bishal on Shabbos. Because it was raw, and now it's cooked. You made it edible. If you took an apple, you baked it, you didn't make it edible. It already was edible. You changed it a little bit. You changed the flavor. So the Pasha reading the Rambam is that the definition of Bishal in Hilchos Shabbos is rendering, at least one definition of bishul for food, and Hilchos Shabbos is making food edible through heat. So that means that beforehand it wasn't edible, and now it is edible. And so the Rambam seems to put together nechal. There's no bishul daraisa if it's edible raw, and there's no bishul daraisa by bishul achar bishul. If it's already cooked and reheating it, that's not the malacha bishul daraisa. Why? The Rambam puts them together. Makes a lot of sense. Take this approach, because in both cases I'm not making it edible. Either it was edible raw, or it's already cooked. It was just cold, dried out. I'm gonna put it back in the oven. It'll moisten. It'll change, but it's already edible. That's what the Rambam seems to say. A lot to say about the Hilchos Shabbos context. But if you accept that reading the Rambam, so then who had the nami over here? Nechal Chai is not just a technicality. It's a definition of bishul. Just like Levi had gotten us thinking before, the bishul akum. Chazal forbade Bishul Akum for a reason, but the Surah HaTakana was Bishul. As I said before, we'll have to see. Is Melichas Akum also included or not? Like, the logic may apply. He gave me a very classy piece of smoked salmon, but or a very classy pickled tomatoes. But Lamaisa, if there was no heat involved, yeah, but that's not Bishul. Is it Bishul? Is it not Bishul? So, and you look at the Rambam, so it could be Nechachai is a question of, if it's Nechachai, that's not called a Bishul. Maybe it's very socially significant. Maybe the Tama HaTakana applies, but the Ofen HaTakana was Bishul. This maybe isn't called Bishul. And if you look at the Rambam here, not only the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos Perek Tes, he talks about Bishul, Melechas Bishul, but here, the Lendi Rambam is fascinating. Halachi Yadali introduces us to Bishul Hakam. He says, a Nachri who cooked wine or milk or honey or various fruits, Mutter, because of Nechal Kamo Shulchad. There were only goes there on a Dover Shein Nechal Kamo Shulchad, like meat or fish, the drum. The Nachri cooked it, then so that's Bishul Hakam. And then Halacha Tezvav, he says, Bamedzvav Mamurim, the Halachi Dal, he defined Bishul Hakam. He drew the Bishul Hakam. Bishul Hakam means Eino Nechal Kamo Shulchad. And then Halacha Tezvav says, by the way, this only applies if it's also Olah Shulchan Malachim. He's not presenting the two Tanaim in a parallel fashion. And I think it's Meduyik, like this Mahalach. Bishul, if it's Nechal Kamo Shulchai, that's not called Bishul Akim. It's not a Bishul. This is not the category that Chazal forbade. If it's Eino Nechal Kamo Shulchai, potato chips, so then it was a Bishul. The Rambam would say the Nachri didn't bake the apple. Baking the apple isn't called a Bishul. Because it was, I mean, he put it in heat, but he didn't render it edible. It already was edible. So that's not called Bishul. But if a Nachri made potato chips, that is a Bishul. If potato chips were raw before, and now he put it through the machine, put it through the heat, now it's taka edible. Elamai, potato chips are still not a problem. Why? Because although it's Bishul Akim, it's not a Bishul Akim, which is Aser, because now he talks about Tama Takana. So that's a passion, at least in the Rambam, is that the two conditions are for two different reasons. Nechal Chai is a Hagdar, what's called Bishul, and Al Shochalachim is even if it's Bishul, Chazal only forbade those Bishulim which are more where the Chashash of Chasnus is heightened. So these are the issues that go into the definition, the basic issues. There's more to talk about. These are the basic issues that go into the definition of which foods are Bishul Akim sensitive, only the foods that fulfill these two requirements. That beforehand it wasn't edible at all. And afterwards, not only is it edible, but it's all Al Shulchan, it's a socially significant dish. Lamasa, what that translates into Bizman HaZeh, it's Mishnah Fiyam Makam Fiyam Azman, Bizman HaZeh, there are basically five categories of food which are Bishul Akim sensitive. Meat, fish, eggs, certain vegetables, like potatoes, for instance. Many vegetables are edible raw, like carrots. And again, you take a look at a crudité. Yeah, even though we might have broccoli usually cooked, but they serve raw broccoli florets in a crudité. So apparently it's nechal kamo shulchai. I believe that eggplants are like potatoes. They're not really edible raw. Meat, fish, eggs, certain vegetables, and grain products. Now bread, we will close with this point that we had mentioned in the beginning. Tosus had said, remember the nafkamina in the opening sugyas, you see at least that Bishul Akim, those drabbanon, the very ancient drabbanon, separate and dependent of pas. That comes up on the opening page of Kufi Days, the symbol of pas akum, that if something, and that comes up to an extent in Sif Days over here in Kufi Dimo as well. If something is qualified in halacha, that's something you came across in Ketzim of Archim, it comes up in Hilchas Matzah, comes up in Hilchas Brachas. If something has a Shem Pas, which is already a Chal Hashem level of Daraisa, so something has a Chal Hashem Pas, then it's by definition not included in Bishul Akim. It may it's included in Pas, and then you have to figure out is there an Isser, does the Isser Pas Akim apply or not? But you have many grain products, as you know, that are not Pas. Pasta, again, the Tosfos talks about it in Brachas and Pesachim. Balpi Pashas, pasta is not Pas. That's why there's no Afarshas Chal on pasta, Alpi Pashas. That's why Alpi Pashas, even if you ate three plates full of the pasta, Namish Kviya Suda, you had a whole supper of pasta, but it's still only mezonos al mechia because it's not pas. It's not even pas baba kisses. It's not pas at all. Without getting into the details, which is the brachas psachim and pasachim sugya of how you magdir pas, it depends on dough versus batter, it depends on baking versus cooking, tsuras pas, whatever it is. That's a fantastic discussion for a different time. But when you have a grain product that's not pas, a grain product that's not pas will often be bishulakim sensitive. There are plenty of types of pasta and noodles that would be served in classy restaurants and a classy wedding. Probably wouldn't be the main course, but it might be a side. It might be part of the. You might have pasta as part of the appetizer. You might have pasta dishes. You might have pasta and meat dishes as part of the shmorg. So pasta can potentially be a bishalachim. It can potentially be also shulchachim. And it's obviously grain, flour, as the Gemara is about to say, is not nechel mo shulchai. That's going to say about daisa. It's not nechel mo shulchai. You don't eat raw flour. Again, that's a sugya in the case of Rachan also. On the Lamavav Amal, Kimcha Desari, Kimcha Techiti. So that's why Bizman Azeh, those five categories are the categories that are Bishlakim sensitive. Meat, fish, eggs, certain vegetables, and many grain products.